Hello, and welcome to episode 297 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, writer of MI666, and joining me as always is the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And he's a number one opportunist, and number one in our hearts, it's Tony Esmond.
Hello.
Hello, all.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah,
it's Sunday night and I'm still tired. I don't know what's up with me at the moment. It's like fucking knackering my job.
I mean, I find, obviously, with the world being what it is at the moment, when we have our weekend, I mean, you're working all the time, Tony, but...
Tony's also doing ridiculous amounts of walking. Is that still going on?
Yeah, still keeping it up. Yeah, it's still going all right.
What a ledge. Is it 15,000 steps a day?
I've changed it. It was 10, now it's 12. So, it's going all right. Yeah.
How far is that?
It's about 5 or 6 miles, I think, something like that.
Bloody hell. One day you'll get home.
Until tomorrow, you'll keep going.
Oh, yeah, that's it, baby. He is the littlest hobo. I used to love that show. If you don't know what it is, Google it, because it's got an amazing theme tune.
We just old.
Yeah. And be prepared for a lot of that this week, because it's just us three. And like I say, it's the weekend. Time is a strange thing. I know certainly when Monday comes around and I'm talking to my work colleagues, how was your weekend? Yeah, it was right. Because none of us, no one can really do anything.
Yeah.
But for the next hour and a half or so, we're going to keep you company and probably make you laugh. And we've got sent some questions which we're going to answer, which will probably include plenty of us going, give me a second, that kind of stuff. And we might even get to the questions as well. Tony. But before we get to all that, because we're going to be talking about comics and stuff, and we were talking before the show that in terms of comics topics, we couldn't really think of anything major that really springs to mind at the moment. But do you know what always springs to my mind when I think of comics?
Erotica.
What do you know what the second thing is that springs to my
comic
mind
house.
When I
think
comic
of
house.
Comic House, our lovely sponsor, yes. They are the indie comic marketplace with a difference. They love the indie scene, and stuff is being added to the website all the time. So you should go there and check it out. If you self-publish your books, you can list your book on there and start selling straight away. It's another avenue to start selling your books. But as always, you should download the app, check it out. There's a 14-day free trial. So the stuff that we talk about all the time, it won't cost you anything to give it a go. And then after that, it's only £3 a month.
There's loads on there at the moment, isn't there? There is loads on there. It's well worth it.
There's loads. It's being added to all the time. And yeah, it is an absolute steal, especially at the moment where it's harder to get to comic shops. We're all going to storm the comic shops in the end, burst through like it's Black Friday, but until then, click on Comic House.
Wait till there's a Comic Mart, man. It's going to be like Dawn of the Dead.
It's carnage.
God, the smell. Yeah. The smell.
Yeah. Oh, Christ. These people have been in their houses all this time. It's going to be worse.
But you don't get that with digital comics. And like, for instance, on Comic House, there's loads of stuff. What's on there at the moment, Dan?
Well, last week's guest, Edison Neo, his entire run of Snake Claws is there ready to consume at your wish. And we've got Time Fracture, and we've got a couple of issues of Commando.
Saw that.
And Red Snow from DC Thompson.
Well, it's a number one on there at the moment in the charts.
I don't have the app handy.
I'll turn it on. Because there was something I thought was a real surprise. I'd never seen it before, and I thought, why is that number one? Emily Korn or something. Emily Korn. Have you ever heard of that?
Nope.
No. But that's why this app's like perfect to check out. Like, you know, especially this show where we're all about like discovering work from all over that we never even knew before. For instance, what is that one about, Tony, if you click on it?
Oh, it's a nice little cover. It's from Marcosi. I'll give you the spiel, ready? Yeah. Emily Korn discovers she's not the girl she thought she was. She holds an ancient earthen powers, but must battle against a dark force in order to unlock her true gender, identity, and destiny. There you go.
I had a look in it, and I wasn't overly taken with it, I'll be honest with you. And I did find it rather surprising that it was number one. I don't know.
I don't understand
kids today.
This is the beauty of apps like this, is like we can go in and we can try loads of different sort of books. You know, it's a, like I say, cheapest chip subscription service, and you can try. I mean, the beauty of it is it's almost like a library, isn't it? You know, when you go in and you see, like, I mean, for me, whenever I went into a library, I tried to find the graphic novels, and that was, you know, never.
When I was a kid, they never had anything like that in my library.
Yeah, I know, and trust me, when I was a kid, it was very rare, and it was only like your sort of standard ones. There's a lot of Vertigo.
Yeah.
Oh, was there? Okay. Should we read the top five out? That might be an interesting thing to do. So I read
go for it. Yeah,
yeah. What's on the top five at the moment?
So number one is Emily Korn. I don't know anything about that. I did try and read it. It just didn't spark
That's
anything.
That's from Marcosia.
Number two is The Forbidden Manual, Snake Claws, Volume 1, Issue 2.
Yes.
Number three is Black Cross, which is Project Superpowers, which is by Warren Ellis and Alec Worley.
Okay.
Dynamite. So that's interesting. Number four is Comic Scene, Volume 2, Number 2, which is a sort of magazine based on comics. I think it does have comics in it as well. And then number five is Dave Robertson's Bell Time.
Oh, okay, excellent.
That's the mixed bag, isn't it?
That's a really diverse lineup on
and
that
one. That's what I love about it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, people are just trying all kinds of different things, you know, whereas you normally, you know, in those heady days of Wizard magazine and all this, and you looked at the top 10 comics or whatever, and it would only be the bigger publishers who I'm not necessarily going to call the big two anymore, because they're not the big two.
We had some question about that, didn't we?
Yeah. So, you know, your Marvel, your DC, that would be the only names you'd see in the first 20, you know, sort of numbers. But with apps like this, there's so many diverse, different kind of books, from action books to autobiographical. This is a long ad for Comic House, but it just, if you like discovering new stuff, then you really should sort of check it out, because that's why they sponsor
us. Yeah, I'm always jumping on Comic House.
Yeah, and you can too if you go to comichouse.com.
Very nice. That's slick.
Yeah,
that's a good one this week.
Yeah, we started to get into a whole topic then about discovery.
Reading out the top five, it's like top of the pop music behind
you. Put a music bed in their bed.
Yeah. Get on with that, V. Get on with that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No. He says, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Well, maybe one. You know, I've got a lot
maybe
on it.
One
man.
Day. Oh, maybe one enough. Day he'll come home.
Yeah.
Until tomorrow.
Can I bring up a pet hate?
Yeah.
What, a pet you hate? Or a pet hate?
A pet hate.
Okay.
And it's come to the fore a number of times recently, and it's also come to the fore personally with me, and it is communication by Kickstarter people.
Okay.
So there was that kickoff, wasn't there, earlier, a month or so ago, about Alex DeCampi calling everyone deadbeats. There was that, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And then there was another kickoff around the Scott Snyder thing, and I think the lady he'd employed to do his Kickstarter had been sort of quite demeaning of people. So I've got to admit, she moved on. Let's just say she moved on and someone else took over.
She take the job and then jacked it in when it was time to do it? Was that the...
I think it might be when it became difficult. Yeah.
Okay.
I was on that Snyder one, and I really didn't like the way she spoke to people. And so I asked for my money back, but they said, oh, it's already in England. It's in Southampton in a warehouse. I said, okay, fair enough. Well, I'll wait for it. Although it has now obviously hit Kickstarter, it's hit Comixology and comic shops, so brilliant. So I'm still waiting for my copy, by the way.
They should have that in backers' hands before it's in shops.
Yeah, I mean that's Kickstarter outrageous. 101. It really is. Yeah,
I think this. Yeah. I'll pick this up in a second. You carry on, Tony. Sorry for interrupting.
So I had another communication. Now this always seems to be. With people, for me anyway, my experience of it is the difficulties with Kickstarter seem to be from people who are comics pros and are either just doing it on the side themselves or have got someone else to do it. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It never seems to be from the small presses. They seem to be like amiable, friendly,
good as gold.
Update, apologetic, in the most part. Not everyone, but in the most part. Okay. So there's another one. So there's the Mike Grell one, The Pilgrim. So I got that through. I messaged on the Kickstarter saying, you know, any ideas what's happening? Have you got a tracker for it? Because it's sort of, you know, it's 11 months, 10 months old. And it keeps saying that everyone's getting theirs, nothing. So I asked that three times. So how are you getting on? Any chance of a tracking number? You know, just to make sure mine isn't lost. Okay, so nothing. So I discovered that you can personally email people on Kickstarter. You can send a direct message. So I sent one to the dude who's running it for Mike Grell, not Mike Grell. So I went and sent one to him and said, look, it's quite frustrating because I'm sending these messages and I'm not getting anything back. And you've just emailed to everyone to say that all the shipping is done.
Yeah, and you haven't had yours.
And I haven't had mine. And it's not cheap getting something from America. You know, I only really did it because I'm a big fan of Mike Grell, and I think he's marvellous. You know, I met him and he's a super nice guy.
Yeah.
This guy was obviously running it for him. And I said, look, it's really frustrating. I haven't had mine. Any news? You know, how are you getting on? And the reply was, yes, it is really frustrating. I've had to go to the post office this many times.
Fuck no.
I don't want to hear about your frustrations. I'll be quite honest with you. You know, just can you tell me where my
car is? Yeah, the customer, like, I don't know if you've ever not worked in customer services, but Pete, they don't want to hear that. They just want the answer to what they're asking for.
Yeah,
Just fucking trying, oh, yeah, but I've been so hard. I don't care, man. Where's the fucking thing I bought?
Yeah, yeah. Either tell me or not. Then there's obviously the Keanu Reeves boom. You know, that's now out monthly. I looked at my Kickstarter and I realized that I've paid for the pledge level where I get a trade pretty much every 9 months or something. So I've got to wait to the end of the year to get my trade for that.
Oh, fuck.
So, fucking hell. So I ended up buying it digitally because I wanted to read it. So I'm paying twice and I'm paying you know, my trousers are being pulled down around the price of shipping. You know,
yeah.
It's, there's the Tim Truman Kickstarter at the moment, which is, depends on your estimation, but I think it was funded in May 3 years ago. And someone put on there 25 months late now or 28 months late now, Tim, or something like that. And he went, thanks for letting me know.
Fucking hell.
but you will get the comic. Thanks for letting me know, but you will get the comic. You know, I sent you 50 will. Quid three years ago.
I think like there's definite lesson to be learned there, and that's not to back the pros when they do the Kickstarters because it
really
seems...
feels that way. Yeah.
And I think it's obviously Kickstarter is a very viable option for a lot of creators, and certainly it's lifeblood for a lot of indie creators who are trying to make their books and everything. And like, you know, to all you people out there who are running these great Kickstarters that we talk about, good on you. When the pros do it, I think sometimes obviously it's never easy money because there's always got to work for it, and so they're always, well, not always, I don't want to say this, but it's never a sole professional running this Kickstarter. There's normally
someone behind it,
running it and stuff. And I think that's where it sort of falls apart. I mean, when a lot of creators do these campaigns and they're the sole ones doing it, or like, you know, there's a small group of people that are all in it to win it. With that, you know, there's the pressures. There's also the whole, you know, I know certain creators who have done their Kickstarter and yes, the books have been late, but they felt every day that it's been late. Do you know what I mean? They've been like, God, you know.
It depends how late. Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. If it's three years, then I'm like,
yeah.
But fulfilling a Kickstarter is a different skill set to creating a comic.
Yeah, completely.
And you may be the best creator on the fucking planet, but making that comic book and then getting into people's hands is two different skill sets. And
so, for example, they come to us. A couple of these creators come to us and they go, "Oh, by the way, shipping costs have gone up," which they have.
They would have done.
Can you send us some more money? And I say, no, you've had 50 quid of my money for three years now. I'm not sending you any more money. Yeah. Where do you stand legally? Are they obliged to send you it, or do they have to return your money? I don't know.
I don't know. That's an interesting one because I didn't struggle, but I got all mine out before Christmas and New Year before it flicked up in rates.
Yeah, we did too.
So now if anyone kind of does their survey late, I'm taking a minor hit on shipping. It's just, it's one of those things. But 2 years, 3 years, my God, the shipping would just be so different that I don't know how they would operate.
And with these pro creators, you know, with these professional creators, you can bet your bottom dollar it'll be on fucking Diamond.
Yeah.
So I've got to stop it. I know I'm a mug for doing it. I realise that. I had a chat with Pete Dory about it the other day at the Drink and Draw, and we've done it because we love these creators, you know.
Yeah.
But if it gets you quicker through Diamond, I don't think, which does seem to be what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I should be doing it.
No.
I mean, I've
you've got to kind of illustrate that this isn't working for you. The way you're providing this is just not working, as in you can't use Kickstarter like this because Yeah. You keep backing them, you keep rewarding them.
Yeah, I always get worried as well, and I've had this a couple of times, where obviously with the messages and the updates from the Kickstarter campaign or whatever, just letting you know how the book's going on and stuff. And sometimes when you're waiting for one, and I've grumbled about it a couple of times on this show, you know, where this creator, a creator's talking about this job that they're doing, that's something else instead of the book they're talking about.
Oh, and mate.
Then it gets to the point where it worries me when someone else jumps on to do an update, and the update is the, we hear you, we apologise, we know you've got concerns or whatever. You know, someone else is jumping in to say sorry. And that is like, oh,
fucking
God.
Red flag. Yeah. Just absolutely like, oh, no.
Yeah. And this is on a something that I'm not losing an arm and a leg on. Do you know what I mean?
This is
But
I'm not one of these twats to go, well, it's the principle in it, but it's not. But I mean, 50 quid's 50 quid to anyone, isn't it?
Yeah. Day and age, money is hugely important to people, because of, you know, work, hospital fees, or God knows what else. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You can't fuck what? People about.
Do you think the Kickstarter thing of if you back this and if it all falls through, there's no legal recourse or any comeback, do you think that's still a defendable position, as it were?
Yeah, it's the difference. It's what Twitter and Facebook and these sort of people are coming across, isn't it? Are they a publisher? You know, that's the thing. That's the problem that they're coming across. There's some amendment, isn't there? US amendment in relation to if you're a publisher or if you're a platform.
It's tricky because, like, if you're saying something can't go on there, surely you're editing, like,
content.
You're editing content, and you're becoming a publisher in that effect, surely.
Yeah.
If you say, right, you can't have this book, but this is okay for our platform, then...
Yeah. I actually think they need to start instituting a policy where you can only put it on Kickstarter if it's completed.
And the
people who are making it are going to have to take a hit to recoup the money.
Or it could
because be... there's so many things that come out, and you know they're not completed. You know they're going to take a year to come out.
Mm.
You know, and some of these books are like first of, you know, issue 1 of 5 or something. You think, well, when's issue 5 going to be out? Seriously, man. 4 years' time?
You know. I've got enough fucking back stuff at times.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, shit, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And then it's turned up.
Yeah.
An interesting one. Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. Mm. I really don't.
I keep telling myself, don't back well-known creators, back Kickstarters, because you know there's someone in... Some of these guys are older guys. There's someone in their ear saying, oh, you should do a Kickstarter. You'll make loads of money.
Yeah.
I'll manage it for you. And it's these people who are fucking bending them over, you know?
Yeah.
And bending me over.
Yeah.
Because it puts a dent on your... reputation, that was
it. Does
I couldn't think of the word then, but you know, and it is that there will be people who are like, oh, I love their work, but then this project came up, I haven't bought anything of theirs. I mean,
the one that always reminds me of that, Vince, is the one that Alex DeCampi, what was the name of the film director? You're a fan of his stuff, aren't you? Who's the film director who did the book? He did Moon.
David Jones,
David Bowie's son. Yeah,
Duncan Jones.
People are backing that book because it's Duncan Jones's book.
Yeah,
and they don't. And these probably, you know, these film fans don't expect to get an email from some comic creator they've never heard of saying you're a bunch of deadbeats.
Yeah.
So,
but the deadbeats haven't filled in their surveys or something.
Yeah, there's a reputational problem there somewhere, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, if all of these Kickstarter projects were meals at a restaurant, no one would go to that fucking restaurant.
I know, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There would be a lot of, I want to talk to your manager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lordy.
Yeah. How'd you get talked to by the fucking waitress? Like, being called a deadbeat. Jesus Christ.
It's certainly an interesting time. I mean, I was going to say, I haven't pledged on anything for a while. I mean, I haven't bought so many comics recently because I'm having to hold back money because of real world stuff, but you know, I did pledge. The fuck is a pledge? I did plunge. I know this week I did pledge on the Etherington Brothers new book.
Oh, nice one!
But that's got a deadline of the April the 8th, and it's for another How to Think When You Draw book. But you know, that's because that's a well oiled machine.
Yeah,
Do you know what I mean?
I
should point out for the truth's sake, I finally got the book through from Mike Grell. I got it through this week, but
hey,
after about 5 messages and, you know.
Years, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was almost, I think it was 8 or something. But
don't need the fucking ball ache of keep chasing it, to be honest.
I know, and it's like, shit like that. Especially when you get an email saying, right, everything's shipped now. You're like,
oh, hold on.
Yeah.
Because you feel like, what if they fuck me off? What
recourse do I have?
Am I just fucked? And I was like, well, I've got my book. Too bad for you. Oh, cheers. I don't bother getting any art tutorial books anymore. Because I've got a few and they just fucking sit on the shelf. Don't even look at me anymore. I think I'm really reading through once and then just don't. Like, if I want reference, I can look on my phone or photos online.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, stuff like that. But I mean, very much it is like art books, though, isn't it? You know, I've certainly got some concept art books that are wonderful. I don't pick them up and read them all the time.
No.
But however, I do like looking up at the shelf and seeing that they're there.
I've got the Art of the Matrix up there. It's got some fucking Jeff Darrow stuff in it, which is fucking awesome. I think that's the main reason I've kept those books. I think it's got some Steve Skaros stuff. He does some of the stories.
Yeah, he did a lot. Okay. Yeah. That was how his relationship with the Wachowskis.
Yeah,
I like him.
Mm. Yeah. So the Kickstarter rant of the week.
There you go.
Yeah. I've got a topic we can discuss if you want. If you don't want to move on to the questions.
Okay.
This popped up on Perch. Okay. Perch's video. Yeah. I watched this the other day.
Now, for people, when we say Perch, what video? There's a YouTube.
There's a cheap YouTube channel, Comics by Perch, and he kind of breaks down comic sales. And
we'll obviously be finding out, but I think he's a retailer, isn't he? I think
so.
Yeah.
He talks as though he's certainly got experience in the area.
Mm.
Has been always fun. I'd love to find out. I've just missed the fucking title. But also, he kind of like brings up questions and talking points. And so often, stuff pops up and I think, oh man, what a great talking point. And this one popped up about a week ago. And it was take it seriously or don't take it seriously. Make up your mind when it comes to comics. And the idea of being people, 1 minute, creators are saying, right, you've got to take this comic seriously and the message seriously. And then when someone gets their panties in a twist over it, it's like, oh, it's only a comic. Don't get stressed out.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, well, what is it? I mean, if you just fucking dash off comics that are absolute garbage, it's like, oh, it's only a comic. Just if you want to be good at something, surely you've got to take it seriously. Like, comedy, humor, the grounding and the mechanics of it have to be taken seriously and worked on. You can't just dash it off. And even like Fantastic Four people, I take that shit seriously. You take it seriously, you don't just kind of like fuck around with the storylines or the backstory or the history of it. I expect you to know that if you come in on as a writer, and if you don't, you've no place being there in my mind.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, we take it seriously, man, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah. It's also should be taken seriously because it's a business. So people should know their business, you know.
Yeah.
There does the personality thing, you know, there's a certain frame of the business of personality which has come into comics over the past, like, decade, 15 years or whatever. Yeah. But also, at the end of the day, it's a business. It is a business. Like, everyone's, as much as, I mean, you could love it as with everything you have, but also, if you're making comics, then you're making something to make money as well. Also, to get, you know, you can have the "I want my art out there," but as I always say, you know, in order, unless you're, you know, being funded by someone rich, it's costing you to make comics. So to make comics, you need to make money to make comics, and certainly, you know, crowdfunding campaigns. Some of the successes that they go on to the next book, etc. It's it is a business, and like, where, you know, people,
especially with the people who describe it as a business, you know, and it should be treated as such, you know.
Yeah.
You act professionally, definitely. If you look at all the greats, you know, the likes of Jack and all these guys, they would, you know, put a shirt and tie on, go into work for you know, a long day, you know, it's like that. That's
and
how it
also
should be.
Every single one of them. Probably. I mean, no, I'm not going to speak for them, but I'd imagine that every single one of these creatives had a moment where they were pissed off and said, this fucking person doesn't know what they're talking about. Because when you get up the food chain and it gets to the people that don't necessarily know what they're talking about, but they're like, oh, I think if Superman doesn't have a cape, he shouldn't be able to fly. You know, that kind of person. You know, the suit, the money man. Or there's all of these, you know, the greats have come up against the publisher or, you know, the person with the purse strings. It's a little different now, especially with indie comics, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone wants to rage against the machine.
Yeah, everyone's a rebel, aren't they?
Yeah. But sometimes you have, certainly with indie books and when you're creating your own thing, you are your machine.
Yeah.
And you have to be, you know, unless you manage to, and when you know, you just say, I'm going to use the word machine again. You are your machine. All of a sudden, it's fucking just, yeah, you're smashing it. You get the attention of one of these big publishers that you've always wanted to work for. You go to them, it changes because you're not answering to yourself anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a very different thing. Even if
there's essentially a chain of command, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your editor is in charge of you and the publisher is in charge of the editor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what happens to, you know, when you're doing the work that you want to do and it goes to a publisher and it's like, you're going to have to change that, you know, because it's, you know, whether it's, it could offend people or it's just not right or they think, you know, how
it's
do
the
you...
wrong story, you got the character wrong. Yeah.
How professional are you then to kill your darlings? Do you know what I mean? You have to evolve, don't you, as a creator? I think in that respect, and you have to work with others, even if you're like a publisher of one. Eventually, you're going to have to work with other people.
Yeah. Well, that's what it's like in the quote unquote real world.
Yeah,
yeah. I wrote a 153 page report last week, and submitted it to the people I work for, and they came back and said, "Oh, right, have you seen this? We need to just include this." And I went, "Oh, cool, yeah, sorry." I was almost like apologizing because I felt bad that I hadn't noticed this new thing that had come up hours before. Gotcha. And needed to include it, you know, urgently in the report. So it's like, okay, you know, that's the job.
Yeah.
When you're all kind of working towards the one goal and you're all pushing together, you can kind of like, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
We've all worked with some mighty wankers in the time past, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That interesting leads on to that question I asked you guys earlier about, with everyone being so open and so available and everything, do you find it harder to separate the creator with the creation? So have you ever been put off reading, say, for example, you're a big fan of Wolverine.
Yeah.
Have you ever been put off reading Wolverine or whatever the character is because you've seen the bloke or the woman on Twitter or whoever on Twitter and they've been just so objectionable or, you know, something like that? Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It
happens to me sometimes.
Yeah, a lot of the times I'm completely unaware of it. Someone has to tell me what's happened because I step away from it a lot of the time. It's sort of, you know, I look at the fire burning in the distance and I don't know what started it when it comes to social media. Does that make sense? So
yeah,
some people have to say,
I mean, you hear stuff, man.
Yeah. Eventually you do. I mean, God, you know, it is a bubble, isn't it? Essentially,
yes.
Yeah. The sound does bounce off the walls, but it's like eventually I'm like, oh really? Oh fucking hell. I'm glad I didn't
read
that.
Would that put you off buying the book?
Yeah, I think so. It definitely would.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If someone was hypothetically, if I found out someone was an objectionable piece of shit to their pet, I'd never buy anything by them again. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It would be.
If I found out someone had, you know, kicked a dog, I'm the same. Do you know what I mean? Put their dog down for no reason, then I would never buy their comic anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't do something like, say, there was a political creator and that they shared different politics to me. I've got no problem in buying their book. But if he said anyone who has different politics to me is a I would be like, okay, fine. I'm not sure I'd fucking read your book, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're sticking beef in on that one.
Yeah. If you don't believe in the restructuring of the A1287 outside of Tring, then please don't buy my book.
Yeah.
Then I'd probably have to say I probably won't buy a book because I'm quite interested in the restructuring of the A1207 outside of Tring. Yeah, yeah.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't make calls for people to not buy your stuff.
Yeah, why would you do that?
Don't ever put that in people's minds when you're selling something.
I'm you know, I don't want to speak about things that I don't know much about in terms of the books or anything. So I'm only talking about how I would go about it. And certainly, you know me, I stay away from politics and comics and all that, as hard as it may seem. But it'd be one of those things that if you disagree with my politics on something, and read the work and see, and let's talk. You know,
yeah.
The whole thing is like, if you don't, it's a debate. It's not an argument.
Also, there's that flip of thing of people saying, like, if you don't come out to say what your politics are and try and remain apolitical, you're being a coward.
Yeah.
Or,
yep.
So you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. Mm. It's.
Yeah, I mean, we've had that aimed at us before.
Yeah.
We've had that, yeah.
And, like, you know, certainly, fucking, it should, there should be a discussion. It shouldn't be just shout. You know, people shouting at each other does nothing.
And I think the thing is, well, people would mistake this because everyone lives in this sixth form politics kind of world that Twitter breeds. Is people think that that politics is binary, and you're either one thing or you're not. You're not. Politics is a fucking range of so many things.
Yeah.
Mm.
And the one example I always give is. The big thing at the moment is that anti-vaccination. There's all these little groups who are anti-vax, aren't they? Mm. You know, right. And some of them are far right people. Some of them are what would be considered to be sort of Marxist, you know. But they're all coming together on this anti-vaccination deluded bullshit. But they're not
just because they share like one.
Yeah, exactly.
A belief doesn't mean they're fucking complete bedfellows. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's that's why its politics is so complicated. That's why people study it for, you know, decades. That's why people who write constant books about it, you know, it's you can't be that binary and say, look, if you don't like my politics, don't buy my books, because it's a ridiculous thing. I don't know what your politics are, and I have no interest in what your politics are. I don't know who you are. You know, you manage to sell 4,000 comics a year. I'm not interested. Yeah. You know, it's like that.
There's a certain level of narcissism as well.
Yeah, it is.
I honestly don't really care about. I only care about the quality of the comic and the writing and the art.
Yeah, my part of me wants to go back to that, and which is the reason I think we've all done it. We've all pulled back off social media because I don't need that noise in my life.
Yeah,
you know, I love comics so much. I don't want to be put off certain things. Yeah,
and we're also we're painfully aware of, like, we do a podcast where it's our voices.
Yeah,
every week. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Everyone's got there.
I'll be honest with you guys. I don't know what your politics are. We don't discuss it because we talk about comics. I couldn't tell you who you guys voted for or what your considerations are on the road outside of Tring, and it doesn't interest me.
Yeah,
you know, I'm personally a very private person. Always have
exactly, and me too. Yeah, I wouldn't. So, you know.
I mean, if it was one of those, you know, you can, like we said before, you can understand why, like, these big actors, they don't fucking touch social media because.
Yeah.
You know, why would you?
I think there was, remember Denzel Washington coming out of some place, and some guy was like, oh, who do you vote for? And he goes, well, what business if it is yours?
Yeah.
I don't have to tell you that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you're right, he doesn't.
Yeah.
It's I've listened to a couple of his talks, and he's a reasonable dude, you know.
Yeah, he seems...
He's a level-headed guy.
Seems quite switched on.
Really made me warm to him much more, and I really like his films, but I think
he's a fucking great actor.
Sensible bloke, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Fucking glory!
Right.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm also
a massive fan of the Equalizer films.
Equalizer, yeah, I watched that this week.
Both of them were absolutely banging. I don't care what
anyone says. First film? Didn't he play an English guy, an SAS guy, in his first film?
I don't know.
Did he?
Yeah, I'll have to look that up. Yeah.
He was on that medical drama, wasn't he, for ages in the States? That was the thing he started on.
Yeah.
He was a TV doctor. As we all are. That's how we start our careers.
I'll tell you down for the questions. There's one other observation someone brought across me last week, and I've desperately tried to find the tweet, but it was a bit of writing advice. And I always listen to, like, writing advice. I don't always take it on board, but I always try and, like, read it and listen to it. So, I mean, sometimes I think, I don't really think that works. But there's nothing wrong with listening to it and judging on that merits. But he was a script writer for films, and he says... he often gets brought on to oversee, like, B movies and zhuzh up the script. And he says, what changes he always makes to make the scripts and the popular B movies go down this route is adding in a personal drama before the B movie elements start coming into it. He goes, the straight B-movie ones don't usually do that well, but if you have like an element of drama, I was thinking this could be applied to comics. So rather than kind of, say The Night of Living Dead, you get the beginning, you got Barbara and her brother, and having this conversation, and there's the drama between the two characters before the zombies come running along, or the blob where you got that the kid who's the kind of the outcast in society, and he's going to prove himself, and then that comes to fruition.
Characters always got to be the most important thing, man.
Definitely,
that's a good point.
Yeah, it really does. Unless you tell it, you know, I mean, sometimes if you don't necessarily have characters and you're telling something more poetic or like, you know, anything like that, there's all different ways of telling stories, of course. But
so it's essentially like a character drama framed with Shaun of the Dead.
I mean, it works with
everything like that. It works with porn. Yeah. If there's no characters in porn, if there's no little story leading up to it and no motivations, if it just starts with like a close up of it going in and out, I'm not interested.
Oh, my God. Well,
that's why I installed that camera in the changing room. No fucking story, is there narrative?
Yeah. There was a news story. I used to work near Vauxhall, and there was a Starbucks, like a, I think almost 24-hour Starbucks there. And one morning I was really gagging and I needed a clear out, and I ran in the loo there and had a clear out. And later on, like a year later, there was a news story about someone had been prosecuted because he'd put a camera in the toilet in there.
Oh man, what kind of degenerate.
Yeah.
You're clever as shit in Starbucks.
Yeah.
And that was the last thing we ever heard of Dan Butcher. Anyway, before all this, we got some questions, haven't we?
Yeah, shall I throw you one?
Let's kick off the umming and ahhing. No, we're not talking about porn again. That's us thinking about things. Go on, Tony.
Right, okay, let's start with one from Ludology, our buddy.
Thank you for the questions, by the way. I know you sent it to you. They're really good questions.
I don't think we're going to get through all of them because we've got loads of really good ones. Cheryl Donald trolled me a tiny bit and sent me a question about cosplayers, but she knows what she's doing. Thanks, Cheryl. This one's from Ludology. Has there been any change in comics tastes since the pod started? And he quotes zombies as having fallen off a bit recently, which I make him right about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll start. I've got one. Probably one of the main things I've noticed is the arrival of people in the industry who have studied animation and then come into comics. And the style of animation obviously is very singular compared to perhaps, you know, like John Buscema and Gil Kane and these sort of people.
Yeah.
I think that's landed. And also the influence that manga has had on comics. I think that's really taken off as well.
Ramped up. Yeah.
Yeah. They're my two examples from a sort of point of view of tastes. And I think, Even stuff like Chew has that manga feel to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There's a lot there that's crossing over, I think.
Yeah. What so I think certainly those sort of the Eastern influences are certainly being felt on the Western audiences as well. And you know, this is a generation who have grown up with these, you know, these animated series, the animated films, like the Tokyo Pop that was 10 years ago. These creators are now coming into fruition and they're becoming fully formed, very talented creators. You know, the amount of times I look on social media, when I do, and it's not a TIE fire, but I love looking at their, you know, when people sort of says, here's a piece of work from 2016, here's a piece of work from that I did yesterday, and just seeing, and it's always an evolution of stuff, you know. And most of the time, I do think, fucking hell, I wish I was that good, and you know, 5 years ago. But it also speaks to, there's a lot of people who are just constant grafting and trying to get their artwork better. A lot of the time, these people aren't making comics; they're just illustrators, or you know, they're just. And most of the time, I would say this, that there's been a boom in commission artists. They're doing what we would, the amount of time I see a piece of work and I see these amazing bits of artwork and I go, oh, I'd love to see a graphic novel with this kind of artwork. You know, I'd love to see this, but you know, the money's in the commissions. A lot of the time.
Let me ask you this then, out of that question is, would you rather have a page of a comic, page of artwork, or a commission to your specifications from the same artist?
I love like this, having sequential pages on the wall.
Me too, man. Yeah, that's my favourite thing.
Love it.
Yeah. If there's an artist and there's a table and there's the commission, he'd do a head sketch or, you know, whatever sketch over a weekend at a convention is the same as one of the pages of a comic that I've read.
It'd be a page. It would be a page,
I think. Yeah.
No, I mean, certainly if it's a page that I've read and I like, then just every day of the week. Do you know what I mean? It's just, there's nothing quite like seeing those. I don't know if you guys
feel like
do
it's a bit
this.
Of history somehow.
And certainly,
it's got a weight to
surely
it.
Surely everyone looks at the original artwork and then holds the comic in their hands up next to it, going, look at that. That's that page.
I've actually bought two issues of the same comic in order to just to have that next to where I keep my, art so I can show people, when they come around and stuff. Yeah.
But saying that, there's nothing quite like that one of a kind commission for you. That there's almost the collector's mentality of it. It's mine. No one else has got. the Gollum. Do you know what I mean? This is mine. This was done just for me. It's just for my wall. Although these days everyone posts their commissions that they get, or certainly the artists.
Yeah.
Do.
I think I know Alan Henderson has got loads of great commissions. In fact, every artist I name, he pulls something off his wall and shows me it. But,
that Shadow collection's absolutely marvellous. I'm very honoured to be part of it.
So, I did a much better Shadow a couple of years later. I wish I'd have done that for him as opposed to the one he got. Because
I'm sure he wouldn't say no if you sent it to him.
I don't know where it is now. Actually, give me a shout and I'll do another Shadow for you, free of charge. Make up for past sins.
But I think that the other element of that is the resale value. So pages of art. So I've got some pages of art on my wall here that I know have gone up a lot in, probably worth 10 times what I paid for them at the time. And that's an investment, I suppose.
I guess the personalised sketch wouldn't...
Yeah, when it's, here's a picture of you dressed as Red Sonja or something. It's not, it's not resellable, is it?
No.
Unless it's someone big, unless it's a big name, like a Kirby or even a Steve Rude or someone. But to have that page from Amazing Spider-Man 173 or something is going to be, you're never going to lose money on that.
I would say one of the things I've seen change, and I think it's entirely because of crowdfunding campaigns, is the sell it on the pitch comic of coming up with such a strong pitch that you want to back it and you want to go in on the Kickstarter or the Indiegogo. So rather than the sort of like generic superhero stuff, generic this, generic that, it's like a high concept story, elevator pitch that gets people in on the ground floor. That seems to have kind of come very much more to the fore rather than just kind of punching stuff out. Like, it's like, once if this happened and this person did this, and you go, that sounds interesting. And then you kind of go from there. I wouldn't say one genre stands taller than any other in that regard. Would you like the zombie thing was fucking massive and it didn't abate for a long time, but it seems a bit more kind of level playing field now. I mean, Dungeons and Dragons took a bit of a surge at one point.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
That seems to have abated.
I actually think martial arts is making a comeback. With stuff like Firepower and stuff, I think. And, we've seen it in the indie scene. In fact, I'm recommending something later that's an old-school martial arts comic. I wonder whether that's everyone preparing for the Shang-Chi movie, going to be the next MCU big hit.
Interesting.
But
yeah.
The thing is, it's hard to tell. I don't necessarily think that... I mean, I really want that to be awesome. But it doesn't feel like there's a wave of...
I wonder if it's John Wick then and stuff like that,
Maybe. It's hard to tell. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. What is the big thing at the moment? I don't think... We haven't seen enough of 2021 to really see what this year's... I'm going to use the word fad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I can tell you. What was 2020's fad then?
I think a lot of 2020 were people talking about 2020.
Yeah. I mean, pandemic amount of pandemic comics, and on reflection, I don't think we did.
We got a few, didn't we?
I thought every mother and his brother was going to be making one, and
I would say 2019 was the year of seeing stuff that looked like what's that fucking stupid cartoon about the old bloke and the kid? Rick and Morty. And Steven Universe.
Yeah, I like that.
That was the year of stuff that looked like Steven Universe, Rick and Morty.
Ape in that style.
Yeah, that's just, that was the year of stuff that looked like that, I think.
Yeah. But that speaks to, like, you know, it's the animation generation. Do you know what I mean? There, a lot of creators now have come up, you know, watching these shows, and certainly there's a lot more sort of shows now. And, you know, some of these.
Do you think their style? I find that their style might have a shelf life, though. You know,
unless they can stretch to other areas in some ways. But then again, that speaks to individuals' tastes. There are some people that only want that style.
Well, what we're saying is it's a trend, aren't we?
I mean, it's a trend, much like everyone drew like Jim Lee for a long time in the '90s.
Yeah,
much like that.
And then a lot of people branch off and go change their style. They start as looking like.
But I agree with you, Tony. I think
that style is very much of its age.
Yeah,
there's a lot of cartoons in that period.
Yeah.
Having fucking them on in my house 24/7.
Yeah, I mean Hamish Steele, and he draws like that all the time. But has he got the skill to be able to draw someone who looks realistic? Do you know what I mean? That's
But at the same time, does he need to? We go to certain creators for certain things, don't we? At the same time, we want a certain thing from an Eric Larson.
He's changed, isn't he? He does.
For instance, he did that fucking that Peanuts one the other day. So he's a bad example because he can do anything.
but for instance, Liefeld banging out the same stuff as he's done.
Yeah, exactly. And probably with Liefeld, as much as there are jokes and stuff, and there's certainly the vocal people, certainly like us, that go, where are the feet? There's also a legion of people that just want that flavour of peanut butter. Do you know what I mean?
So many people in the 90s.
There's the interesting thing about Liefeld, unlike a lot of the other people who appeared in that image bubble, who have just disappeared now. You know, all you've got to do is pick up, you know, the shitty Image comics, and you'll think, who on earth's that? You know, Liefeld is a survivor, isn't he? He's a weird one.
Yeah.
He's pushed his, I hate the word, but he's pushed his brand enough to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of those people didn't.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, like you say, there was a lot of people that worked with, like, Extreme Studios and stuff that were working into that style of work. And it sort of speaks to...
Dan Panosian's a good example of that, because Dan Panosian was very much in that school, wasn't he?
And I think...
And it worked in an Inca, and now he's amazing. You know,
His style's really changed.
Because a lot of the time, these
artists, they start off aping another person's style, but then when they find their own, they really come into their own. Do you know what I mean? When I first saw Joe Madureira's first work, it shocked me. It was an X-Men issue that looked like someone had photocopied Jim Lee, and then he went away, and then his style has been a style that other people have then ate.
Yeah, I think you've got to be adaptable. Yeah. I think that you have to survive.
Mm.
I think you've got to have the ability. I mean, I think Liefeld's an extreme version of it, isn't he? Because he's not adaptable, but he's just so omnipresent.
Here's a question, then. Yeah. With that in mind, does that work the same for writers?
Yeah, I think so. You should be able to write anything. If you're a writer, you shouldn't just be doing... At this moment, I was talking to Alan Henderson about Brubaker. Not Brubaker. Who wrote the Dark Knight movie? Not the the Killing Joke movie. Who wrote... he wrote 100 Bullets. Brian Azzarello.
Yeah.
I was thinking this about Brian Azzarello, and he's very much... He has done some superhero stuff, and he's done some noir stuff, but he's not the bloke who I think could probably write Ambush Bug. You know, he's not the sort of bloke who could write something in Wizard and Chips. You know, he's not.
God, I think that.
I would probably read that, to be fair. But he's not. He's kind of stuck, maybe through a reputational reason in that area. And I think as a writer, you've got to be able to write anything. And I'm not saying I'm a great writer, because I'm not, but I've tried to do that. So we've written our things for the Spark, haven't we? And then I've also written Atomic Hercules. So I think you have to be able to write on all different levels as a writer to survive and to make money.
Do you think it's... There's a certain cinematic sort of parallel as well. I think it's not easier. It all depends on the creator. But certainly when you have someone that's known for their comedy stuff, I think it's easier for them to then impress with something serious and dramatic than the other way around. Purely because comedy is very, very fucking difficult. Yeah,
it's difficult to pull off comedy. I think comedy is probably the most difficult thing in comics, certainly, to be able to pull off.
God, yeah.
I mean, you can do wit, and like, you know, I mean, you can't necessarily get sarcasm across on the page, but and satire.
But to be actual funny, is really
to be a laugh out loud.
Yeah,
there's tons of comics I've read, and it's like purporting to be humorous, and it's like nothing.
Not
a fucking blip.
I tell you, you can do it, and I'm generally mostly critical of the sleepy fella himself, but I think Dan Slott can do both.
Okay.
Look at some of the Spider-Man he does, there's a lot of gravitas to that, and then if you look at some of the funny stuff he does, it's pretty funny.
Yeah. Bendis is pretty. But he's a character-oriented writer, though, isn't he, rather than
I find my laughs at character moments where it's a relatively serious comic and then they have like a light moment, which I'm trying to think of like a humor comic straight out. I guess it's different because like you get stuff like Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah, that played with your emotions, didn't it?
Yeah.
You can't just say blanket statements about humor comics.
Yeah.
We went all over the place with that question. Sorry, Ludology.
Sorry. Thanks for the question.
Sorry, Phil. Should we do another one?
Go for it.
Yes. Yeah.
If you could be written into any comic, what would it be? Do you appear as a character in a comic? Get your
jokes out of the way, Dan.
I'll do my first one. So I would be written into the Uncanny X-Men run where Jean Grey was a member of the Hellfire Club, and I'd knock her back doors in.
Send your emails
to awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
So, and that was a question from Cheryl Donald. Sorry, Cheryl.
Might be an element of sex special, obviously.
Did you know that Fathom was based on Jill Thompson?
No.
Yeah, physically, apparently Fathom was based on Jill Thompson.
There you go. Yeah. I did not know that, T.
I think it's quite an impossible...
I don't know.
So let's just say this. You want to be drawn in as a background character in a comic. What one would you be in? So what means that much to you? You can show to your friends and say, look, I'm in the background there. I'm in the crowd. Oh. What would it be? What would you be in?
Oh, God.
Oh, that's...
Just to be part of the art. Is that what you're saying? To be part of the art of a comic.
So you could be like watching a fight in the Avengers, or, you know, you could be... Spider-Man could swing over your head, or, you know... Batman could save you from a mugger, or, you know, this sort of thing. What would it be? Yeah.
I'd quite happily turn up in like one of the big character books just to sort of say to people, check this out. Look, it's me. And smiling in the background there.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know who I'd get fucking clout with from that.
You know, the amount of times you get, oh, that's nice.
So you see what I mean? That's me in the background there. That Spidey comic. What size do you want your drink?
I wish I had swiped right. I don't know which way you swiped.
God, I don't know. That's a difficult one. I would.
You want a Gene Colan's Tomb of Dracula victims. So Dracula would be drinking my blood and turning me into a vampire in that comic because I love it.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah, I'll just go pull a real random one. Richard Moore's Boneyard, which is an indie book that I really loved. That had a sort of cartoon. I would have liked to be a quirky character in that, sort of in the background and stuff. I love that.
I would be in Captain Carrot and the Zoo Crew. I would be a friend of his who was a badger.
Of course you'd be a badger. Why not? Badgers are awesome.
Yeah, cool.
Shout out to Steve Sims there.
Or I'd be a head. Do you remember Nexus, where the other planet next to him was? They were sort of super powerful, but they were just like floating heads on little platforms.
Yeah,
I'd want him to draw me as one of those heads.
You'd be the head.
Yeah, I'm not going there with that.
Fair play.
Yeah.
Put that question to bed.
Yeah, that was a good one. Okay, so we've got a bit of a controversial one from Mr. Ian Ashcroft, who also was at the Drink and Draw. Mm. Thanks, Ian. He drew a great Calvin and Hobbes, actually. Have you seen it online yet?
No, I've not seen that one.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, I'll send you it later. So he'd like us to revisit the free work versus paid work question. Should you do free work?
Tough, man.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to sort of kind of the way I answered it before, and it's depends on your own choices and your own situations.
Yeah.
Don't let anyone bully you into doing either. There's loads of noise on Twitter going, oh, you shouldn't work for free. Well, I don't think you're in a position to tell me what to do, my friend. And there's likewise, there shouldn't be anyone to say, well, you should be doing that for free. Then you're also not in the position to tell me that either.
Yeah.
I've done loads of work for free, as we all have here.
Yeah.
And don't overestimate and don't underestimate your work, I think. Mm. Or overprice or underprice yourself. And my free work has led to paid work.
Yeah.
And it depends what the situation is. So,
yeah.
It's a very good answer, and
we're not talking about exposure work here. I think the whole work for exposure thing is just sort of...
Depends, though, man. I'm going to say if
I mean in the case of, like, if someone comes to you and goes, oh, I can't give you anything, but you're going to get exposure from this.
But it depends if it's, if it's John Carpenter, for example. He says, oh, you do as a cover.
That's a different story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, he should be paying you because he's probably got lots of money.
But also, I think it's down to the creator to decide the exposure angle. To think, this is going to get my work in front of these eyes, so... I can, whether it be a cheaper rate or whether it doing it free or whatever, this is going to be good for my career. And also, you're under no obligation to tell anyone what you're what you do.
Yeah, it's none of your business.
Yeah,
those big artworks. Yeah, yeah. There's those people who trade on that by saying, well, we're going to do like a Captain America book or a Predator book, and we want your Predator art. It's no paying, but when you get it in there, like, it'd be like a fucking calling card for your work. I don't know the upsides and downs, so that's kind of hard to weigh.
And also, notoriously, especially like working from bigger companies, even if it's just one-off commissions and stuff, a lot of this stuff is notoriously underpaid anyway. We all know this. You know, the amount of times that you see these amazing pieces of art and then you find out, well, probably not how much the person got for it, but, you just sort of think, oh, bloody hell, how can that?
I think some people are advised badly. When we were pricing up, when I was involved with the Spark and we were pricing up the first issue, we went around to some people and asked them their page rates, and some of them were outrageously high.
Yeah.
And it's because people said, oh, yeah, you should ask this. Yeah, oh, you're really good. You should ask this. Okay, you can ask it. Of course you can. It's a free world. But you ain't going to get work with us asking that price.
Yeah, you can kind of...
Yeah.
It's one of those things as kind of the freelancer, you got to find where you're... Mark lays that you may pitch in a job and then you'll never hear back because maybe you went in too high, or sometimes you might go in too low and you realize, fuck me, I've like charged them X amount of money, but it's the amount of work I'm putting in just in no way makes it like it levels it up. For me, doing free jobs now, I find I've done free work, I will do free work, and I'll definitely be doing it in the future. But if someone says to me and said, oh, we've got this going on, do you mind? Like doing it as if I do it, you kind of weigh up what's the fucking negatives, and sometimes doing free work for people can really fucking bite you in the ass. It really just, if they keep coming back for changes, and it's like, well, I did this as a fucking favor, and now like I'm on change number 5 prattin' around with it, and I'd rather just have the free time sitting on my big fat ass than get involved, you know what I mean?
I mean, most of our comics work involves us working for free. I mean, we're not working, but we're helping people promote their comic books and stuff like that, and we're doing that now. And before we came on, I was moaning to you two about how I think I've been taken advantage of a bit by a couple of people. And that happens, you know.
It's
and my time's precious. I get like an hour or two a day to myself at most, you know, and I get one day off a week. Mm. And, you know...
One thing this fucking lockdown's highlighted to me, and that's like the lack of free time you generally get. Like before the lockdown, I was fucking squeezing in comic making wherever I could, but so I get up at fucking crack of dawn, commuting to work, and then not home till so like the early evening, and then I can't just fuck everyone off in the family and just sit there creating comics while they get on with their lives. It's a real tough fucking ask.
Yeah.
And hats off to anyone who can squeeze in and get it done.
Yep.
Yeah.
What do you think that with a commute, especially in London, and you know, even without a commute at the moment, I'm doing 13 hours a day. And then traveling, I'll do a bit, half an hour there, half an hour back. You know, it's 14 hours. And what's left with your day? Nothing's left.
I would say, like reflecting on it, the paid and unpaid. If you're doing something for nothing, it's essentially it's costing you your time, your resources, and you've got to weigh that up to see, is this worthwhile investment? What do I stand to gain from it?
It's what we say. It depends on your own personal situations. And relate that to the job you've been offered or not been offered. It's an interesting one, isn't it? I do react, you know, I do shout at my phone occasionally when people say, well, you shouldn't be doing anything for free. And I say, well, who are you to say that? There's nothing, you know. Or people saying, you should be doing that for free. Well, who are you to say that as well? You know, it's nonsense.
I do have
a problem with you shouldn't be doing that for free, because it's like, Evo, so they're fucking cool, man. And people got fucking money to live.
Yeah.
It's kind of a ridiculous notion of like being skinflint fucking artists that ain't got two pennies to rub together.
It's down to the individual. Don't just be aware of your worth. And
I think you can make money for yourself on Kickstarter. If you want to make some money for yourself, I fucking ain't going to begrudge you for it. As long as you're putting out a decent product at a competitive price.
Yeah.
If you walk away with some money in your hand, that's fucking business. That's making comics.
Well, of course, that's a big factor, isn't it, mate? It factors into how much is this going to sell?
Yeah.
You know, what you're asking is that reasonable for this product? Yeah. Like I've taken a bath on nearly all my comics. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's just, once I've paid for a page rate, I'm not going to make that money back.
No. That fucking Berserk, I paid like nearly $3.99 for it, and it's like, that's fucking steep for a digital comic I'm probably going to read once.
Well, that's interesting, because that falls into another question we got from Rory Donald. What is a fair price for a 32 page comic?
That's 32 pages. Well, that's sometimes bloody rare.
26 pages of art. He says, I think I can't remember written this bit down. I think he says 26 pages of comic, but a 32 page comic, you know, product. I'm going to say there's different reasons. There's different horses for different courses. What's a fair price for a comic? In my opinion, it should be free. Now, bear with me when I say this, right? It should be free, and I think comics should be free to everyone in an ideal world. However, what is a realistic price for a comic should be enough to support the creators and produce the comic. And then in a capitalistic point of view, in relation to this question, if it ain't selling, don't make it, and don't up the price because your comic isn't selling and you're taking the pain out of my wallet.
Here's a variable for you then. Same size issue, you know, same size everything. One is a ongoing series, one is a one shot. Should the price stay the same?
That's interesting, because in my mind I'd like comics to go back to being one issue stories sometimes. Like they used to be.
I mean, sometimes I think there's more value that, you know, in a one shot. Do you know what I mean? A one and done. I think you can, I'm more likely to
pay a few.
It's almost a subconscious thing. Yeah, I'm more likely to go, yeah, this would be £4, £5 or whatever. It's a one and done. You know, I've done that many times and haven't regretted it. Whereas if I'm paying that £5 for something that is going to be 10 issues, 12 issues, go whatever, am I going to keep paying that for the 10 in all of
these? Especially the way that comics are written. A lot of comics are written these days, and I know Dan's going to come to an example of this later, where issue one is often just set up. And I feel like, is that the same price as someone taking the effort to tell me a whole three act story? I get you, man. I think I agree with you. I think it's a weird one, but how do you estimate that? But I think you might be right.
I mean some of the books that we talk about in our favorite comics of the year, you know, some of mine have been like, say, like, I don't know, one of Claire Spiller's works, they always sort of one and done, probably about similar sort of page count. And they're always they're smashes. Do you know what I mean? They're some of my favourite books of the year.
It's like they're calling it a full meal. There's a comic that's a full meal. It's a beginning, a middle, and an end.
It's also, from like coming as a small press thing, I feel like I've got going like rock bottom, because if I've got like my book and you're going to buy, what are you going to buy? Amazing Spider-Man, or are you going to buy a fucking Vanguard? If there's some punter that rolls up. Whereas if they roll up and say, oh, fucking Amazing Spider-Man's $3, Vanguard's 17.99 cents or whatever it is. I might give that a roll.
Currently 79p on Comixology. I looked today. Yeah, that's value for you, my friend. Yeah,
trying
to
fucking get through to Comixology to change the prices, because a couple of issues there I've done the wrong price on them. I want to bring them all down to 79p. Can't fucking get hold of them.
All right.
Try fucking email them. But one thing I've done with Gumroad, I've put Viper on there for nothing. And it says you can put whatever price you want. And I've put the recommended amount is $2. Mm. Of all the sales I've had, they've all been $5.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
So people have put above the recommended?
Yeah, it says recommended $2.
Yeah.
You can download it for nothing if you want.
Yeah.
And everyone has put $5.
See, I think that's quite interesting. That's very certainly like the Hocus Pocus, you know, Rick and Jordan, you know, all of those that comic's available on Gumroad as well, you know, freely. Mm. But I think it's, there are people, of course, that will download it for nothing. But I think
that's fine.
That speaks to, dare I say it, like real comic readers, because they're the ones that find the value in it. They're the ones that are going to be like, yeah, no, I'm going to give £5 for this because I appreciate the work that's gone into it. I think that's what it says to me when someone's giving you $5 rather than...
You could read it, download it and read it for nothing, and then figure, actually, that's worth a few quid, and then send that on.
Yeah.
If that's the way that's going to operate, I'm down with that, because then there's kind of a meritocracy, and you're always going to get people that are taking it for free.
And there are nice people out there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As well as all the grumbling and stuff, there's you know... All you lovely people out there who are like, no, they've worked hard on this. We're going to give them some money, of which we know many of them. We've
be interested to see across the board what the average price is that people are willing to pay for a Gumroad. Pay what you like. It'd be interesting, wouldn't it? And try and figure it out against page number and creators and stuff. And that should give us a rough estimate of what people are willing to pay for a digital copy.
I swear, someone in the past, did we do it on the pod page or did I do it? Or we did a poll of like, what? How much would you pay?
Yeah, that rings a bell.
We've definitely done that. I ran a poll on the ACP one, how much you'd pay for a digital copy of a comic. And it was relatively low. I mean, I don't know, what do publishers factor in when their budgeting strategy, how much the digital sales will come in? I mean, that's absolutely quantifiable, isn't it, when they say, right, we've got 500 quid or whatever sales on the digital. So they factor that in when they next start like sorting out the next title, whatever, how much those projected digital sales would be.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, well, and that one will rumble on forever.
Yeah.
Can't, it's a hard one. I can't tell you how to price your Kickstarter book on. It's so tough.
How can you value art? Art is worth millions because someone was willing to pay millions to buy that piece of art. It's as simple as that. That's how it gets its value.
Good. Another one from Cheryl, actually. Cheryl has asked, since the start of the pandemic, I wonder how many lads or lasses have given writing, drawing or lettering comics a go. Have you seen more subscribers for your wonderful... That's very nice of you to say so, Cheryl. Yeah. For your wonderful podcast over the past year, for example. I don't think we have seen a big upshoot in people, have we?
No.
And I think that's due to the whole commute thing, which we hear all about all the time, about people listening to us on the commute. But I have had people contact me who I'd never heard of before as listeners, and the Facebook group has had a lot of people join, which is interesting. It's a funny one. And do you guys think that more people have taken up making comics or reading them? Do you think it's
I don't necessarily think making comics, because I honestly think it's gotten harder. I know some people are churning out stuff, and like, you know, last week Edison Neo has made 5 issues in a space of fucking 6 months.
He's a
beast.
Yeah. He's destroying it.
Yeah, he's absolutely destroying it, and they're amazing. You should listen to the last week's episode. But also, it hits people really hard. It's been difficult for me to do any creating. But I do think the therapeutic nature of creating art, or whether it be writing, poetry, just drawing, illustration, or whatever, I think a lot more people have done that, have taken that up, just to help their well-being, their mental well-being and stuff. I think there's definitely a lot of people who are going, oh, I'm going to take an art class, or I've started. I mean, Tony, you've had an upsurge in your art over the past couple of years, haven't you?
I have, mate, and my missus has. As I sent you last week, didn't I?
Yeah.
She started doing art classes and stuff. And I think I know that Helena's doing some great art class stuff. Yeah. Go to Art92 and have a look at it. I love Helena's technique of talking about it. I think there's two ways of doing it, man. I think it depends on your personality. From the point of view of me, in times of trouble, I've always thrown myself into work. I'm in the same way, I've thrown myself into making comics in the last year. I mean, we put out 7 comics last year from
fucking
Tribute.
Nice one, man.
Yeah, so we were quite pleased with that. We've got another 2 coming out in the next couple of months. So I think in a way of helping you cope, I think it's a good thing. I think in the art therapy, we hear about it all the time, don't we? And I think it can be. But then again, I understand people who just haven't got it in them. They haven't got that energy. You know, they're so beaten down by what's going on. Sometimes they just can't lift a pen.
Do you have
a
bit of theory about that, as in... the uncertainty of what was going on in the quarantine did catch a lot of creators on the back foot. You didn't know how long it was going to go on for, what was happening. So people might have put off projects that they were going to do.
Yeah.
And then I'll do that when this calms down in 2 months, roll on 6 months, and then people start thinking, oh, fuck, I'm going to have to reassess what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
I've spoken to creators where they've said, I was going to launch this Kickstarter last year, or I was going to do this last year, and obviously didn't, because of everything that's going on. And that's completely understandable. I mean, you would think in this time of uncertainty, I'll hold on and see how this plays out. Fuck me, we did it on El Marvo, issue 2.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
we had, the blip, and it was like, Jesus Christ, like, we literally launched it the day the lockdown pretty much came into effect, and it wasn't going well. So we said, okay, we're going to park this and leave it till later in the year, and we launched it, and it fortunately made it across the line. But I can understand why people have those wobbles, because you at that time you didn't know what was coming up. I mean, if fucking today, you know, you get the Facebook memories. I had one from last year when it was talking about going into the lockdown, so it's like a year that's
amazing, isn't it? It is. Yeah. we do live in historic times, don't we, when you think about it that way. Yeah, we do. I think it's pushed me to do more, I think, but just to distract myself, really.
Yeah.
I think certainly in terms of, like, subscribers behind the screen, as it were, I wouldn't say that we've seen a massive uptake in the weekly stuff, but certainly, especially with podcasts as well, sometimes people save up a couple of episodes, then... There's been a bit of... there was a drop. When it all kicked off, there was a drop. There was a very definite drop, and we saw it. We just kept doing what we're doing, because we're just doing this anyway.
We don't do it for numbers.
But I mean, that's a fucking light at the end of the tunnel talking to you guys on Sunday.
Oh, God.
That was really...
Someone get that man a drink.
Really, no, it still really is. I used to like, great, it's fucking this. I could blow off a bit of steam. And...
Yeah.
But we've spread ourselves out with the stuff like the drink and draws as well.
Yeah.
That's the thing, I think. Yeah. I think the drink and draws has been really great. I think personally, I find that. I know a couple of people were talking about it to me the other day, saying, "Oh, thank God, it's a drink and draw again. It's like the highlight of my month." You know, I know people get. I think a couple of people get dressed up for it.
But we have no. I've noticed a growth in the. Pardon.
Facebook group
and an uptake in, like, you know, our episodes over a period of time. And thank you to anyone and everyone who listens to this show whenever you listen to it.
You never have to apologize for not listening to one. Someone says
God,
to me,
no.
Sorry, I didn't. Don't worry about it. It's
So and the way we structure these shows, they're structured in a way of, if there's something on this week's episode you want to listen to, then listen to it. Do you know what I mean? That's why it's not news of the week. It's nothing like that. It's been interesting watching numbers, especially like Podbean as well. It's slightly updated it, so on the actual sort of episode list, you can actually see the downloads.
Yeah, it just changed, didn't it? I know.
Has been fascinating, because I've been scrolling down just to see how it was.
Do you ever look at the map? Sorry, mate, go on.
Does that factor in iTunes, or is it just through Podbean?
I think it factors in all of them.
Yeah, it takes in, okay. Does it take in Spotify as well? I don't know.
I think it does. Yeah, it's all the stream because it's all coming from the same RSS feed kind of thing.
Okay. Do you ever look at the map to see where people are coming from?
Yes, I have.
Done. Weird ones pop up. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's always very interesting. But wherever you are in the world, thank you for listening to this show.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, because we really, really appreciate it. Even though we're just talking a load of bollocks most of the time.
It's weird occasionally. Like I mentioned one to you earlier, didn't I? Guy, give a little shout out to Guy. He messaged me earlier to say he was a listener. I didn't think Guy was a listener. I mean, he's a pal of ours. We met him at the 40th. Do you remember?
Yeah.
I didn't think he was a listener, but he said he was listening in his summer house today. Apparently, you can get us on Alexa or something. So that should set everyone's Alexa. It should set everyone's off.
Yeah, Alexa.
Listen to the Awesome Comics podcast.
There you go. maybe we should start like doing a something where it's like, "Hi, they can't come to the phone right now." We should
like
do
a cameo.
We should do what and just go word up, different cameo. Sorry, kids.
No, you know that cameo. Yeah. Hey Siri, what's my name? I've changed mine recently to the fuck off.
Yeah.
There you go.
How you like me now, Tony?
Hey, like me now? Did I tell you the? Hey Siri, what's my name?
No, it don't work anymore.
Oh, it's not working.
Is it when it calls you Batman?
I've changed it to the Masked Avenger.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Have we got another question? Because I think we just obliterated that one.
I don't think we have. I'm not the one I've written down. Did you guys want to have a look through to informant on the Facebook group? I've got one about. We got one about public domain characters, but I think we're going to leave that one for the moment.
That was an interesting question that I think might make for an interesting and fun experimental episode. You know, when we do these, we decided to do something fun this week.
Yeah,
I think we should do that. We should all like go away, just pick a random public domain, then come back and pitch it or something.
Oh, here's one. Here's one from Sam Webster. Given the popularity of tapas, webtoons, manga, etc., compared with the big two, he's done that in finger quotes. Do you think comics as we know them are on borrowed time?
Oh, why did you say that one last? Why is that there?
This kind of whole pandemic fucking caught Marvel and DC completely flat footed with Diamond. They're just absolutely.
I worry about Diamond being so, so powerful.
Here's, it's not really a scoop because I think most people know it. That whole Marvel and DC thing, they're not the big hitters.
Not at the moment. We're kept up by a couple of books about dogs and someone in his underpants.
Yep. Scholastic own the world of comics. I mean that was obviously over the top, but certainly the numbers speak volumes in terms of like the Amazon. Personally, that puts a spring in my step because it's kids reading comics and graphic novels. I'm like, if kids, I don't care what this fucking book is, kids are reading comics.
And hopefully they'll keep reading them.
And also, numbers... Those huge numbers that you see are because kids are reading comics, and sometimes you have to realise that a lot of this stuff is a kids' medium. I know we do all these whole the dark deconstructions. Oh yeah, this is a grown up thing, but it's going to die if we're all fucking.
Well, if we don't grab them, then the thing is, we need to. I want them to read comics. I mean, I brought a kid up on comics. You know, I forced him. I glued his eyelids open and made him read them, and he still does. But the I love him to death, but he's. The thing is, okay, they're reading these comics. Good. Now, Marvel and DC, get your fucking act together because you're going to have to grab these kids when they come out the back of that age group. Yeah. You're going to need to grab them into your comics as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
last callback to the Kickstarter ones. Pete Davis left the messages. Why is Joe Madge screwing over people he promised and pledged at the $100 level comic art for 4 years ago? And why are people okay with this?
I don't think
people are okay with it, Pete.
No.
Yeah, one to hear about, isn't he? Yeah,
it's just a slapping. Who the fuck? Why the fuck? Who
is that Brian Rankin? Oh, no, it's Stuart, wasn't it? Yeah.
Stuart, yeah.
Yeah, Brian wanted me to have another go at the Guardian. Guardian readers. But yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Oh dear. But no, it's been an interesting chat, and also at the same
time, ranted a bit there, babes.
I'm so tired. I have no idea what I've said for the past.
You always say that. You say that all the time. Yeah. When you were on Eamon's podcast the other day, I went out to go and you went, I don't remember anything I said.
I can't, though. I go into some weird fever dream whenever I'm on any kind of podcast. You know,
I was listening to that in the we're queuing up for the fucking post office. You did well.
Yeah, it's a good one, man.
Did
yeah,
that
yeah,
make
yeah.
any sense?
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. And I haven't got my coaster because I think you got my coaster, didn't you? Do you remember it? Lawless a few years ago.
No, I've got your magnet.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I thought it was a coaster.
No, Eamon sent me a coaster separately. That's what I got recently. But no, right. It's a magnet is what I got.
Oh, okay. I need to get my magnet off you then.
Yeah, when we hold each other next.
Yeah.
I went down to the post office to send off some Vipers, and there was an old couple in front of me talking to the lady, and they were like fucking around drawing out money, and like one of them drew out about 250 quid or whatever, and the old boy was trying to take out 250 quid. Oh, no, you can't take out 250 because you're on the same account. And he was like, yeah, but it's the same card. And I was like, this is going to get annoying. And after 5 minutes, I carried on. But the guy behind me was getting well wound up, and that alleviated it for me.
So did that give you life?
The soothing was that one noise of Vince's voice in your ears. Yeah.
No, when like he started getting wound up, I was like, yeah, fucking take all the time you want.
we're objectionable, aren't we? Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. Another one. I can't go to the post office. I've told you, haven't I? Because there's a sexual chemistry with me and the woman who works in there. It's getting embarrassing.
Mm. I always say when they say, is there anything you're worth in there? It's like, nah, it's just comics. A little bit of a soul dies there.
It's worth mentioning that because if it comes to or from us, doesn't it? And it's worth over a certain amount, you've got to pay money on it, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just say none.
No, it's worthless.
But, worthless. And speaking of worthless, this. Thank you for listening to this episode. as always, we're free. There's absolutely no worth to anything that we say, but we hope you enjoy it. No, but do we have any shout-outs this week, gents?
Yeah, I've been sent a few, actually.
I've got to remind Tony about Big Project Hype.
Good. I've got that ready. So one of our buddies, Gabby Scanlon,
is in
the upcoming anthology Project Big Hype. It is really interesting. So what they've tried to do with this, or what they're doing with it, is a 300-page manga-sized book in a similar sort of vein to Shonen. Is it Shonen or Shohan?
Shonen Jump.
Yeah. Shonen Jump for Western comics. So it's a big, thick phone directory full of comic books. It's an American project. It's on Kickstarter. It has just met its money, but it could do with some more. 10 days to go, and it looks really great. And Gabby's done one of the stories in there. Gabby's, as we keep saying, Gabby's one of the up-and-comers. I've got to tell you, she's a great worth ethic, great style, and a buddy of ours, which probably doesn't go to do her credit anyway, but there you go. Nerds Who Haunted Themselves is coming to Kickstarter to fund just the print run, I think, and also the any other money that's made is going back in to help the running costs for True Believers from Stuart Moraine. It's a short gag-based strip about the little ghost characters that you'll see if you go to the conventions, or you'll see on anything on Stuart or Andy Zoot's page, and it's basically them, and it's just sort of little gag strips. It's a bit like Penguin, I suppose, but little ghosts. It's that sort of humour. Thanks to everyone who came along to last Friday's Drink and Draw. Really good one. Nice numbers of people. Everyone was very chatty. Everyone was, willing to show their art and stuff. And we really got into the nuts and bolts of some great historic comic artists and stuff. And there was a lot of talk about that. Really nice. And my last one is, I don't know if you know this year, guys. Have you heard about Easter this year?
No.
It's been cancelled.
Oh, has it?
And Good Friday is now Tribute Friday.
Hey.
And there is a good chance it may involve someone being crucified. But just watch this space. There you go.
All about that.
Yeah. Thank you, mate.
And I've got a shout out for Merrick, the Sensational Elephant Man, Volume 2.
Hey.
Trade paperback, now on Kickstarter. It's got 25 days to go, as you're going to hear this. It's already smashed through its target. And it's going to be more Elephant Man goodness from Tom Ward and Luke Parker.
Yes.
Is that the name? Yes.
I need to pledge on this one, actually.
I have pledged.
I need to break my duck on that. It were.
Is this the one where it's got the crossover in it? It's got the crossover with Dr. Crow, which I thought was fucking excellent. It reminds me of the old school two heroes meet initially not getting on, and then
you recommended that on the extra show.
Yeah. But they really, every character is their character, and you could come into it as a Merrick fan and then see the Crow. Oh yeah, that's, I really like what I see there, and vice versa. So yeah,
nice.
Check it out.
Nice. Just a shout out to congratulate former guest, friend of the show, Jess Bradley, who with the Mike Barfield, they won the Blue Peter Book Awards.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah,
hey, nice one.
Best book with a facts with a poo, a gnu, and you. Class.
Jess got a good great sense of humour, didn't she? Yeah. Remember when on that episode we were talking about Archie Comics? Now he worked at Bumley's, and it did make me laugh. That one.
Yeah. Yep.
Makes me laugh now.
Just got a great, great style, and like her work's brilliant in like the Phoenix and stuff. Anyway, so yeah, well deserved, well deserved. So without further ado, that almost rhymed with the title of that book.
Yeah.
Shall we recommend some comics?
Yes.
Yeah.
Why not, eh?
I stay recommend for mine. I'm not really sure.
Well,
I do
go on then, Dan.
Let's go with yours, because I think have we all read this one? Have you read it, V?
Have I?
Berserker.
I have not read it. I have not read it. I almost got it, but I didn't.
Okay. Here's a reference. Would you like to suck my cock?
Pardon?
What?
Sorry, it's from Clerks.
Oh, right, okay. Well, it's also a piece of audio that's going to be used many, many times now.
It's a shame you can't put audio on the wall in public toilets, isn't it, really? Because that would be fine.
My love for you is a ticking clock. Berserker. There we go. Didn't quite land.
Oh, fucking hell, course. I forgot about that. Oh, no, yeah.
Berserker by Keanu Reeves, Matt Kent, and Ron Garney. Gary recommended this to me today on the messenger. So I was toying with playing downloading it yesterday, and thought, oh, fuck it, I'll do it this morning. And it's better part of $5 for like a single issue, 20 odd pages. And I was like, okay, I'll get it.
Back to our previous question.
Yes.
And
I thought it was all right. I can't get over excited about it. It was just, okay, yeah, that's fine. I mean, it wouldn't have been much difference. The drawings don't especially look like Keanu Reeves. I know it's Keanu Reeves, but...
Much bulkier, isn't he? He's much muscular. Yeah.
So it's kind of like a super-powered Wolverine assassin-type dude who goes on a mission, gets fucked up, and then comes back and gets healed up.
Isn't it like an immortal or something like that?
Yeah, it's revealed he's an immortal. Yeah. And
especially like Old God.
Yeah, a lot of the fighting is kind of like, there's massive fights at the start. And it's that thing of like, I don't really know the framing of this. And I'm kind of like, okay, just, it's fighting. I'm kind of on my own in the, I'm not really too impressed. I don't really like the John Wick films. Just unending violence and action with no content or reason behind it.
Don't take this any further, because they are my lifeblood.
I can't. I told you I can't watch him. I won't watch him because of the dog.
Oh yeah, it's pretty.
I've avoided it so far.
I mean, that's over relatively quickly.
I know, but
it's kind of the only thing I wish is like there's a lot of kind of like blood and violence and stuff, and I find like people getting head punches, eyeballs flying off, and I feel like this would have been shocking 10-15 years ago, but after you've read Invincible, this is fucking like milk. It's just if you wanted this to be shocking, you had to dial it up a lot more for me.
The thing that I noticed is I actually think because Matt Kent writes it with Keanu Reeves, doesn't he? I think.
Mm. Yeah.
I actually think that Keanu Reeves had a lot more to do with the writing than people might allege.
Okay.
Because it feels like he's got an intention to do something with that first issue and make it that relentless. And a lot of the dialogue isn't quite what I'd expect from Matt Kent, I'm going to say, weirdly. Okay. Yeah.
Gary mentioned he'd kind of like, he likes what he sees in the first issue, but he would go for the trades afterwards, not so much get the next issue of the comic. And I can't say I'm really that jazzed to get the next issue of the comic.
It's a setup, isn't it? It's just a setup. Yeah.
Lots of setup, but
it's a relentless, violent all the way through with a little bit of flashback history in it, isn't it? That's what it is. And it just goes all the way through, non-stop. Even the bit where he sort of splayed out at the end there is, part of it.
But it gets interesting. Stuff at the end, I found the most interesting stuff.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I wish there was a bit more of this and a little... I can't complain too much about action. As long as there's a kind of reason, a good reason behind it.
It's fairly cliché. Since we've had Old Guard... and Highlander, it's fairly cliched, isn't it? It's and then when he goes, don't kill him, the orders are you don't kill him, what's he gonna do? We know he's gonna kill him, don't we? It looks great. Ron Garney is amazing.
The art is fucking ace. It just, we was talking rough briefly before we began the show, it's kind of like got John Romita Jr. kind of overtones. I was really getting the Man Without Fear vibes in some of it. A bit of Frank Miller at times. There's some use of like silhouettes with the kind of like,
he knows how to carry it, and he knows how
it works. I can't really fault the art. I think it really works really well for the comic.
I'd buy anything Garney does. I think it's brilliant. I buy comics just because he's done the cover.
I didn't know what it was about when I went in, and I was but massively on the fence about it, if I'm honest.
I'm not going to buy the next issue because I've backed the Kickstarter like a fool, and I'm getting the trade, so I've got enough of a taste of it now. I bought the digital, I'm just going to wait for the trades.
But the trade if the story might go somewhere, it'd be fucking amazing.
If it does,
tell me, Tony, and I'll
still got the potential. I think it's definitely a trade waiter for me. Even if I hadn't ordered it on Kickstarter, I think I'd definitely be. I'd like even a nice hardback would do me. You know,
what was the hook? Was there a hook from the first issue to get into the second? I can't remember. I only fucking read it today, so it doesn't speak volumes. I can't remember.
Good, eh?
Yeah, there we go.
Do you want to go, V-Man? Have you just sent it through to us, have you?
Yeah, I don't know if the link will work. Now, the book I'm going to talk about this week is it's not a strange one. It's a very interesting book. It's very autobiographical. It was something I was interested to read from... I got it on Comixology. From a creator called Ted Klossen. And it's called As Before, So Behind. Redo. In brackets. What captured me was the cover, which is a lovely cover. But then I read the synopsis, and this is one of the most personal works I've ever read. And it may be about the subject matter, and it's very emotional. I'll just put it in the synopsis. This is what I read and then thought, this is going to be interesting to read. As he says, in November, and the thing is, this synopsis very much said exactly. It says it on within the first couple of pages. I think it's the first page of the book. It's the author writing this, so immediately you can tell how personal it was. He said, in November of 2017, my spouse and I lost our infant son shortly following his birth due to complications during labour. In the wake of this tragedy, as an attempt to process what had happened, I began to write a narrative that I hoped might give context, rescue fragile details from fading memory, and allow me to speak to my son one last time. The initial attempt for this work appeared in the first ever print issue of The Nib, as well as on their website. That might be a publication that some of you might be aware of. He said, due to space considerations in the print run, the work was greatly truncated. I have since pursued a longer edit, added other avenues of thought, extending the language of the piece, and giving moments I felt required further contemplation, more breathing room. What follows is an attempt to speak to the living as well as the dead. Now, as you can tell from that synopsis alone, this isn't something, it's not a it's not something that I'm going to joke about or anything, because this is it's a very emotional piece of work, and it's not necessarily something that, I mean, that synopsis alone intrigued me, and I have to give a lot of kudos and plaudits to a creator to be willing to do a work like this for something that I can't fathom. I can't contemplate the emotional, you know, it's a work that is almost a therapeutic exercise in itself, I'm sure, for Ted and his wife and stuff, and it reads very much like a poem, it's very poetic. Purely, if I'm just talking from the comic sort of standpoint, it's a lovely looking piece of work. I think the art is all digital, but you know, there's dreamlike sequences. It sort of goes forward and back in time. In fact, there are dream sequences and lots of talk of like the flows of rivers and going backwards and forwards and stuff as this emotional event is happening. And I felt it does feel very much like it feels like his work. It doesn't feel like it's not voyeuristic in any kind of way, because it's from a narrative perspective, it's very interesting, because he's not talking to the reader. He's not talking to anything. He's talking to his son. And there are so many things about this work which are very thought-provoking and heartbreaking as well. And I mean, I don't have children yet or whenever, but it's just still us. Yeah, I've got to look after you two every week. But no, I shed a tear at the end as well. It's hard to put into words what this book is. It doesn't work like a standard comic book, as it were. And certainly Ted is very open and honest. I think this was something maybe to, you know, just to help the process and in order to do it, and maybe and it will probably speak to a lot of people who unfortunately have had similar events happen.
Mate, I missed that. What was the event?
His infant son passed away shortly after being born.
Right, okay. Right, yeah. Okay.
Due to like complications. It's not graphic in any way, but it does sort of talk about those moments, and like literally he describes, you know, him and his wife. There's also like a, in between the moments in the hospital, it flashes to an art retreat they were at one point, and at these counterpoints in their lives. It's just a very interesting, it's only 25 pages. Like I say, it's a redo because it is someone who saw this piece of work and has then added to it and contemplated it more. And I certainly hope doing the work was helpful to them. This was a real, when it came out of nowhere from my weekly comic browsing. Because it's non-fiction, it's biographical. You know, normally when I go to my Wednesday comics, I'm going, go on, let's see what nonsense I can buy this week. But when I read that synopsis, I was intrigued to see what this was, and also the artwork itself was fascinating. Like I say, because of the subject matter, it's not necessary for everyone, but I think it is. I think it's quite an important and poignant piece of work that I haven't read anything quite like this before. And I, you know, it will stay with me, which I think comics can do when they're done in certain ways. I got it on Comixology. It's only 79p. Ted's also got other work, which seems to be more fantastical in nature. He's a comic creator as well. This just seemed to be like we all have, comics can help us, comics and art can help us get through moments, even if you're just doing it for yourself. Or, like I say, I don't know what it was like when it was in the print run of The Nib. But I think it's a fascinating piece of work, and I applaud Ted for putting something like this out. For people like me who don't know him, and all of a sudden I've got a window into someone's life that is obviously a tragic event. It was a very I just had to talk about it this week. I can't.
Good stuff, man.
Yeah,
shows the power of the medium, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing, and it really does. I mean, I can talk about I could tell you about certain pages of artwork which are beautiful. There's one of just a typewriter that's stunning. There's also a nice poetry to the words he's saying, because, you know, like I say, he's talking to someone else, not us, and you really feel that. I would recommend reading As Before, So Behind, if it might be hard for some people to read, but it's a beautiful piece of work. So
good stuff, man.
Worth checking out.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Nice to hear. Yeah, nice to hear. Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Tony, what have you got?
Well, completely. I don't know. You know, that's a bit of a change of subject.
Well, yeah. that's why I thought I'd put it in the middle.
I'm going to invite you two guys to open the file I've sent you of this comic, because we're going to talk a bit about it. I think it might be useful.
Yeah.
We got Dan put up a post for a change of pace. He put it up in the Facebook page rather than the Facebook group. Say, what have you got on the go at the moment? What do you want to promote? And a lot of people who are clearly not in the chat group, or maybe are and aren't vocal, who are on the Facebook page, put a load of stuff up. And this was one of them. And it's a book called Peerless. It's issue one of an 8-issue series. It's written by Chris Moran, Nick Macari, art by Pablo Papini and Will Quintana. Bringing it back to the UK, letters by Rob Jones. It's a martial arts book. In 1977, two cranes landed in New York City and the Bronx was nearly annihilated. This comes from a Kickstarter that hit its mark in August 2020. Like I said, I saw it on the Facebook group and it looked really good. And I reached out immediately to the dude, to Chris. I'll read you the summary on the Kickstarter page. A Wing Chun master fights her way through New York City, its toughest gangs, to stop the execution of her lover at the hands of an occult martial arts clan. It's basically a magical version of a martial arts movie set against a background of the Warriors, if you think of it like that.
Okay.
So each of the gangs has got their own sort of trademark. But add to that a big dose of 1970s set in New York martial arts movies. It's a great concept, really good. Opens with a match between on a rooftop between a hooded ninja style magical martial arts character who wields lightning, and he's fighting the female martial artist who's a central character whose name is Kiara. It then goes back, so that's the sort of opener. So it drops you into the action, which is something I know Bendis writes about in his book on how to write comics. Drops you in the action and then rewinds 39 hours before, and she's heading into New York Harbor on a boat past the Statue of Liberty. Then it flips to a street gang who control the docks area called the Castaways. Now that's going to be my first thing. So if you go to the pages, so if you've got, you'll see you've got the sequence with her fighting to start with. Then we've got the outline. It's a lovely page. The intro page, Peerless, the title page. You know, with the Statue of Liberty framing the left side of the page, which I think is lovely, absolutely lovely. And she's a well-drawn character. I really like how she is realized. She's a woman of color. She's got the classic Misty Knight, big earrings, high afro, black leather jacket, kind of kick ass look, you know, a good looking woman, but with a strength about her, you know, really good. And then it flips to a character who looks like all the world to see to a sort of master of kung fu character almost, you know, like master of kung fu in street clothes running through the fish market being chased. And he comes across a gang called the Castaways. Now, I don't know about the font for that title, the Castaways. Can you see that?
Yes. Yeah.
It's not too readable to me.
No. I recognise that font, and it needs to be solid black, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, if you fast forward, so you've got that. I think that's page 7 from where I'm reading it. Mm. If you go through to page 8, on the back of one of the street gang's leather jackets, because they have their sort of their gang names on the back. Can you see that?
Yeah.
The next page. That says Cast Delays.
Cast
Delays.
What's that about?
Or Caster Jays.
Caster Jays.
That's not the name of the gang. I don't know what quite happened there. I don't know why they did that.
Yeah, I can't really read that. What's going on with a W there?
It doesn't feel like a W because there's not enough room next to the A, is there, almost?
No, yeah, I can't read that,
Unless his name is AJ or something. I don't know, maybe that's the point. I think
that's the artist, isn't it, as opposed to the letterer.
Letterer, maybe, yeah. I like, in general terms, I like a lot of the art. I think it opens really well. I like the set piece right at the start where you've got the light shining them onto the side of the building is a lovely way of opening it. And I think she's very well realized. I think when it gets to the chase scenes and the confrontation with the street gangs, I find the faces are very samey. Page 7, you look at his face, you look at the face of the gangs. That's the same face, man, with that dark brow. Do you see what I mean?
Mm. Yes. Dark
shadow on the eyes. I mean, it shakes itself out of that a bit. But faces do seem to change a little bit. If you go to the one on page 9 where they're laughing, page 8 where they're laughing, they're two different people suddenly in that image. I think there may be some a little too much leaning on reference. Isn't always a bad thing, but it might be a little bit too much leaning on reference there, I think.
Okay.
If you look at the one where I'll criticise the back of the jacket, if you look at the geezer's face who's being pushed away, the sort of Master of Kung Fu Chang Chi character, there's something going on with his face here. I'm not sure why it's in shadow like that. It's strange effect. These are just minor quibbles, but you know, they sent it through to us to have a look through, so I thought we might as well do. The design on then a gang turn up called the Dragons. I kind of like that design. That's very a Warriors.
Yeah, that's
very cool.
The whole styling and the kind of the period or that part of the world is spot on.
Yeah, looks nice, isn't it? And I'm a sucker really for the 70s New York. As soon as it says 70s New York, I'm down. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm down. DTF. I don't know what that means, but I am. And then there's some fighting that kicks off, and the blows are well handled. The kicks and the punches and the strikes are well handled. Not 100% certain why she punches her in the stomach when she's holding a knife in the other hand. There's obviously, maybe that's going to be a foreshadowing of a future reason, but there's something that happens there. And then they head into a bar. I'm not going to spoil it all because I do think it deserves to be read, and I do think you will like it. There's a dude who runs the bar. He's a black guy and he's smoking, and he's got like a bit of a sort of handlebar come goatee sort of thing, and he's smoking a cigar. But the colorist, I don't know what he's doing with the cigar. In a couple of the panels, it looks like the dude's tongue.
Yeah, the cigar's a little strange for me.
Yeah, that's weird, though, isn't it?
Sometimes it looks on one of the pages, it looks like it's been added after everything else.
Right, yeah.
Is it page
20 or something? It looks like his tongue's sticking out.
After the pool table, after they finish with the pool table. And someone says, was that really one of the Fists of Fate? That panel.
Yeah, that's a weird one, isn't it? Yeah. I feel like there's some reference being used there. I think he's got that face from reference and he's added the cigar in. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's not quite right. It's not a badly drawn comic. I quite like it. And the colouring works in the most part, apart from those small little things. It works well. There's some nice link fence colouring going on there. Who wants to draw a link fence, you know? But it looks good. Now, this is a 45-page comic, and it has 27 pages of actual comic in it, which I thought was interesting. There's an awful lot of back matter in it. If you scroll through, you've got the thank you page from the Kickstarter. That's fine. It's cool. You got a little bit of a. I think Chris is in a band. There's an interesting moment I'll talk about in a second, which he describes. There's quite a lot of bonus material. He does something which I've not seen before, really. He does an issue rundown. So if you keep scrolling, you've got basically a short paragraph on what happens on each issue, all the way through to issue 8.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was unusual. I don't know.
Yeah, not sure about that.
It's almost like he's put loads of behind-the-scenes stuff in, and he's decided to put this issue rundown thing in. Yeah, funny one.
Yeah, I guess you got to be careful with tipping your hand there, showing...
Yeah, especially if you decide to do something different.
Perhaps maybe people want to see that and think, oh, okay, we're getting on that. But, you know, like, if you ever watched a series on Netflix or something, and you go, oh, don't look at the next fucking episode, the synopsis.
Yeah, don't look at the last episode.
Fucking spoil spoil what's coming down the line.
It's a bit like reading the last chapter of a book, isn't it? I suppose.
Yeah.
Page of a book. Yeah. There's some of that. So there's an art gallery by some, I'm guessing, some friends or fans of the artwork, and there's Jake Kelly and some other stuff in there. Sebastian Pires, I've heard of before. Some interesting stuff in it. There's a couple of variant covers. Sorry, mate.
He's got a warning there that says there are mild spoilers ahead.
Oh, is he? So, okay.
That's just good. Before you get to that page. But then, right.
Oh, of course there is. I get it. Yeah.
And
then there's the script as well. I mean, if you're paying for this on Kickstarter, you're getting a lot of extras, which I kind of admire. Yeah. I think that's kind of a nice idea.
If you're getting that bundled in for free, it's fine. But I wouldn't read in the script of a comic. It's not really for me.
Yeah. I didn't really look to see what the prices were on Kickstarter, but if this is basically a 26-page comic. So I wouldn't expect to pay a huge amount more than you would pay for a 26-page comic. I don't know if this filler... There's stuff you could probably just look at online. I'm not sure. So anyway, send me through a digital copy. I appreciate it, and it's something that I probably will follow. I think it's good. I think he's kickstarting each issue as we go along. I think that's how it works. Okay. The origins of it are quite original, actually. I found it quite interesting. Is it turns out the inspiration of this was came from some musical experimentation that Chris played, and he was just sort of playing along, and he realised that what he was creating was something similar to a 1970s kung fu theme, and from that it gave him inspiration to move over into making this this comic.
Interesting.
That's kind of cool. I often get little ideas for things while I'm listening to music. I don't know about you guys. I don't necessarily write them down, but you know, it's quite, you know, allows
thinking and sort of rethinking, thinking and walking and listening to music. Yeah, just get it all the time.
Yeah Definitely. I like the cover. I think the cover's good. There's a somewhere for me it's somewhere between an old school 70s pulp novel or drawn martial arts movie poster, but with a touch of the Marfood, a touch of the stylized, you know, with the, especially with the way she's drawn. She's sort of slightly elongated. Her hair is like big, you know, as well as a bum, to be fair. But it's nice.
Yeah, I like that cover. It's really, really striking. I mean, it's, if I saw the thumbnail of that, it'd really stand out.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Again, not to be that guy. I'm not mad on the font choices for the names at the top.
Yeah.
I don't know why the underlining bits on them.
That's strange, isn't it? Yeah. Mm. I don't know whether I'm going to say it doesn't work quite against the white for me. I maybe would have used some other... I'm not a designer like you two guys, but I would have used maybe something... Maybe it's a hard one. Yeah.
Maybe like... I'd put the names on the bottom right-hand corner where above the S and Peerless, like a list there.
Yeah.
I don't know. You'd have to play with it on screen.
Yeah. But. I'd increase her size slightly as well, because the older bloke on the right there, you don't see him in this issue. And she's the heroine. She's the cool one. She's the kick-ass one. And I like the image of her. There's a couple of alternative covers. If you go back to the back matter again, there's some in there.
Yeah, there's some lovely covers in there.
Yeah, a little bit spoilery, one of them, actually. If you look at the third one, I don't know whether it's spoilery or it's homage-y. It looks like she's got Iron Fist fists.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's
one in the subway train.
Yeah, I like that one.
That's nice. Yeah.
That third one is very Big China, isn't it? A big Trouble in Little China kind of feel to it. Yeah, which is cool by me. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm glad I asked him about it. And it was nice of him to send it through to us for a review. And he is a listener. So thanks, Chris. That's really, really cool of you. And
nice one.
Yeah, so I'll be definitely
looking more there. That one completely bypassed me.
Yeah, I missed that one. Yeah, really did. Yeah, don't forget, whilst we don't allow Kickstarter adverts on the Facebook page, we're more than happy to shout them out on here. So please do send it through. Yeah, if you've got one on the go. Good stuff. Thanks, Chris. That's my one. There you go, guys.
There you go. And another episode in the bag. And what a bag it's been. we've been a little grumpy. We've been a little contemplative.
Contempor- thoughtful.
We've thought about words and stuff. Yes, and hopefully you've enjoyed it. I mean, certainly we've ranted about some stuff, and if there's anything you want us to, any other topics or anything that you want to talk about, want us to talk about, etc. There's several different ways you can get in touch with us. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at the Awesome Pod, where we'll probably put a shout out to some stuff and get questions going, all kinds, in the lead up to episode 300. If you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Likewise, join the community group Awesome Comics Talk, because there's a great group of people on there. Just chatting about comics every day of every week.
There's a poll gone up about, I've just seen it. Sam Webster's put a poll up about reading habits during lockdown, which is quite, should make for interesting reading. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
See, other than this show, which is just us pretty waffling on about stuff, the community out there is keeping the conversation going, which is what we want. So join the group Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe and leave a review. It helps get the word out about the show and therefore all the comics and everything else we talk about. If you listen to us on any other networks like Spotify, Amazon, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what are the networks we on, Tony?
Well, there's a bit of a niche one. I'm not sure if you're aware of this one, but Pod WandaVision. So there's a TV series. I'm not sure if you heard of it.
Really?
Called WandaVision. And apparently nobody's talking about it online or anything. No, so I think that's probably worthwhile looking for. Yeah.
Oh.
Interesting.
Oh, well, interesting. Mm. I might have to check that out.
Yeah, good idea.
Anyway.
A bit of sarcasm there.
A little bit of sarcasm.
Yeah. Start talking about comics, you bastards.
Hashtag satire. Thank you very much for listening this week, folks. As always, wherever you are in the world, we hope you're doing okay, you're safe and healthy, and enjoying making, reading, or just loving comics. We'll see you next week for more of the same nonsense on the road to 300. Not the Gerard Butler film, but our episode. But until then, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
NeverOwnAnything.com.
There you go. Dan?
Bang. You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Which you should. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Jester Diablo. And until we speak again, folks, we hope you have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. Search for a different kind of comic that you wouldn't... Go on, here's a little bit of homework. Why don't you just pick up a comic that you wouldn't normally read? Just try something different. Let us know what it is. And you never know. You might really, really enjoy it. Unlike this episode, which you probably hated. No, I'm sure.
If you spend money on it, though, we're not giving you any money.
Yeah, spend money on it. I mean, this content is free, what you're getting now, so we make no promises about anything.
All our opinions are generally uninformed. So
completely and utterly uninformed. I'm happy to be
corrected on any stance I've got.
Yeah.
If
we are experts in nothing. So there you go. But hopefully we keep you entertained. So for the next week, go forth, read loads of comics, keep making your awesome comics, and let us know about them. And until we speak again, from Dan, Tony and myself, have a brilliant week and
stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Brilliant.
See, I left out the words, the lead in then. I think I might just say and then you've got to go. But yeah, sorry, I dropped out.
Audio, that was totally in sync.
Yeah,
totally. So I don't know if it was out.
There's something up with your audio, Vince, maybe. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's not me.
That was absolutely fucking gold.
I mean, listeners, what do you think? Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.